Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Winning streak for the Rockets. Not one, not two, three wins in a row. The Rockets now 4-16 on the season. They blow out the Thunder last night, 102-89. They covered the spread. Rockets rolling right now, Joel, playing good basketball.
They are, Jeremy, and I continue to bring this up to you. What is the common denominator between the winning streak and their playing good basketball?
Christian
at least one
Wood.
Of them. No, although he's playing great.
Armani Brooks getting minutes.
Yeah, but he's not making enough shots.
Daniel House getting involved in the glass.
No. Mr. Green sitting on the sidelines. Greatest.
Gary Matthews.
Jalen Green. Gordon. I want Jalen Green to do exactly what we finally heard. It was like a ray of sunshine in the middle of the evening last night after the game when they interviewed KPJ for his first triple-double, and kind of a weak-ass way to get the last rebound, but nonetheless, it was a team effort. But when you look at it and you interview him and he says to you, because Kaylee Griffin asked him, what's the difference between the way you're playing before and the way you're playing now? He's like, I got to sit and observe, and I got to see that instead of trying to be what everybody else wanted or expected me to be, now I'm just back to being me playing basketball. Well, that's what I hope Jalen Green does too, because I really believe that, and like I said, all the subliminal messages sent by all the quotes by all these guys during this winning streak are, the ball is not sticky anymore. It's not stagnant. There's not one-on-one. We're not all standing around watching. Everybody's involved. We're getting guys open shots. Well, when you look at tape and you look at the film and you go back and watch Jalen Green, one-on-two was a regular occurrence. Dribbling the air out of the ball, a la Steve Francis, was something that he did a lot. And it's changed the mentality of the entire team to see the light of being able to how successful the team can be if you just play within the confines of a system. That's why Silas is so excited too. So I'm not crapping on Jalen Green, but what I am saying is, just like KPJ admitted when he said, I was observing while sitting out and I learned some things, I want Jalen Green to do the same thing.
It's probably very common with rookies, right? Like, you're playing rookies that are very young. They're still boys compared to men that play in the NBA. You know that you're sacrificing probably the chances of you winning more games whenever you're playing them heavy minutes, but it's part of it. You have
thing,
to
right?
do it because
like
you have to develop them. Exactly. You have to develop them. You have to give them minutes where they might not even be the best option to give you the best chance to win that night. But because of their talent and their ceiling as a player, you have to give them the minutes. I think sitting sometimes can help a player a lot. Like, I'm not somebody who loves the idea of playing first year quarterbacks in situations that they aren't ready for. I think Pat Mahomes is the latest great example of that. Jalen Green, perhaps he can use this injury where he's sitting out for a few games to kind of get an idea of, oh, this is winning basketball. And I think, look, that's part of the learning curve of players. That's part of the learning curve of rookies, is figuring out how to play the game and what is winning basketball, what's taking good shots, what's getting everybody involved. I think all of that is something that young players go through. So I don't think it's like an exception here with Jalen Green. I think it's part of the learning curve for young players. Now, Kevin Porter Jr., you mentioned just a moment ago about how he sat a few games and now he's seeing the game a lot better. He had a triple-double last night. How about that from KPJ? 11 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds, if you want to call it a triple-double. Statistically, it was a triple-double.
It was.
He was chasing a little bit.
You know, it wasn't quite Ricky Davis when he threw the ball off the backboard to himself for a rebound. But it was, right. But the thing that I would say, unlike the selfishness of Ricky Davis that was all about Ricky taking care of Ricky, this was Şengün trying to tip the ball to him first and foremost, and then the rest of the team basically saying, hey, go get this thing. We're not touching it for a reason so that you can finally get it. So at least I like the togetherness of the team paying attention to it, and even Coach Silas keeping in the game where some of these coaches like Tibbs and guys like that, old school guys, they wouldn't have kept him in just for the sake of getting the triple-double. But they did it. They did it as a team. They all wanted him to get it. And it shows you they're coming together. That's why this John Wall thing could be so disruptive. Because John Wall, now when you hear some of the pregame comments of Silas, well, he needs a couple weeks to get into shape. We're going to see what we're going to do. We're going to continue to talk. Well, I told you yesterday, I think that he could be a positive for this team if he comes in and plays point guard, but plays point guard in a team mentality of I'm distributing, I'm getting the ball to other people, I'm keeping the ball moving, and we're playing a certain style, then KPJ can play the two, Green can play the three, we can play up-tempo, we can do a lot of good things, Wood at the four. If he comes in selfishly saying, I'm building my resume back up to show competitive teams that want me, that I'm still good, and I'm going to do all the things selfishly that make me the franchise player here until I go somewhere else, it could be so disruptive to this team, they got to handle this thing with kid gloves before they decide to put John Wall back in a uniform.
New John Wall rumor. And Stephen Silas was talking about John Wall yesterday a lot in his pregame, saying it needs to be right for the Rockets. It needs to be right for John Wall. There needs to be some egos checked there probably before John Wall ever plays for the Houston Rockets again. Now, maybe they can trade him before he ever plays in a game. Now, it would be a team that's desperate, right? A. Sherrod Blakely, who covers the NBA for Bleacher Report, Full Court Press as well, he says that multiple league sources believe the Knicks will look to trade Kemba Walker, and New York may have a trade partner in the Rockets who are eager to move John Wall.
Here's the thing. The Rockets have to get out of this mentality of being the feeding ground cesspool for the success of top-tier teams in the NBA. Okay? The only way that the Rockets should be even exploring another bad trade like Rafael Stone's made two blockbuster bad ones so far. Hate to break it to you, Rockets fans. It's reality. It's honesty. It's not anything other than that. When you look at what they could have gotten, what they should have gotten, what they didn't get. If you take Kemba Walker.
So what are the two bad ones? Harden and Russ, you're talking
absolutely,
about?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Like I said, Tommy Shepard in Washington got an extension at a lot more money because of the fact that Rafael Stone laid over and basically just played dead for him to get everything he needed. And then the subsequent move to trade him to LA for three starters and two picks, which is what Stone should have gotten for him in the first place, instead of taking the wounded, injured, franchise-killing contract of John Wall, especially when he wasn't playing. So from this standpoint, they got to stop the mentality of going, oh, here's another even swap. We'll take your garbage for a guy that doesn't want to play here anymore. You guys keep continuing to be a playoff team, and you might even get better. We'll just take your guy and try and wade our way through and try and get the best, you know, our pick to be the highest pick by being the worst team. No, if Kemba's coming back, I need young players. I need assets. I need it to make sense for the Rockets to do this. Otherwise, I'm not interested in being the bottom feeder to help other teams and facilitate. Sam Presti's done it the right way in OKC. He'll take your veteran trash you want to get rid of at high dollar, but it's got to come with a price of a couple of young, talented players and or draft picks so that I can stockpile my future as opposed to just saying, hey, even swap. We'll take yours for ours. We'll call it a day.
Well, John Wall here is the big price, right? John Wall is the one with the big contract and is the big trash in a trade. Kemba Walker is not very expensive, actually. He's making a little under $9 million this year. He makes a little over $9 million next year. So, I mean, you have to make the contracts work. I mean, it's so far removed on how, like, the contracts are staggered.
Well, between come within Kemba 15%. That Wall. Means the Knicks better throw some young talent your way.
I mean, they're going to have to throw some contract your way, too. They're going to throw some money your way, too.
Sure.
Like, if I'm Rafael Stone, and I have John Wall for 44 on the books this year and 46 on the books next year, I'm trading him for whatever I can trade him for, even if it's just clearing the salary. Like, I don't need young I don't need young pieces. I don't need draft picks
careful
for
what
John
you say
Wall.
There.
He's the worst contract
right.
in the NBA.
But careful what you
I'll
say
give
there.
Him away for anybody.
No, not for anybody anything, because the last thing you want to do is, and this is where the Ben Simmons trade comes back into perspective, anybody at any price means you could actually take on more salary for more years in a return. That's what you want to avoid.
Well, I should have been clear there. I'm not adding money to my future
right.
books. But if I can trade John Wall for Kemba Walker and let's just say like $30 million of expiring contracts, I'd do that in a heartbeat. I don't care about picks. I don't care about young players. You're getting nothing for John Wall anyways. If I can save $46 million next season, or I guess let's say 36 because you're going to pay Kemba Walker $9 million next year, absolutely I do that if I'm Rafael Stone.
See, but here's the thing. Again, because you had to come within 15%, you have to include other players.
But they could be expiring.
And I get that they could be expiring. But also, the Knicks aren't going to completely gut the rest of their rotation and their roster because they've got veterans that would fit that bill, per se, salary-wise. But they're also key cogs in what Tibbs is doing with the Knicks on a nightly basis to be a playoff team. So I think that that's where you say, look, scratching backs is going to be a part of this deal. I know John Wall is going to make you better because Tibbs has already crossed that line and said, not only are you not the starting point guard, Kemba, the whole Cinderella story of you coming to homecoming to New York is you're out of my rotation. So now that the ties have been cut, they've been severed. That's done. You got to try and do what the Rockets have to do. But because of the difference in salary, I need some young players. I need a Knox to see if he's got anything left before he goes and walks. And he'll walk, but he's young. He gets a more of an opportunity. I would explore an Obi Toppin and see, you know, is that a young player that I can get? Now, with that, I might take a veteran or two that's overpaid, that's on the end of your bench. But it's got to make sense for the Rockets to get at least a piece or two for the future as well as expiring contract.
Yeah, to me it makes sense just getting rid of the John Wall contract. Quentin Grimes getting minutes there in New York, by the way. He is part of the Tibbs rotation there in New York. How about Christian Wood, how he's played as of late? Yesterday, 20-20, 24 points, 21 rebounds. The night before against Charlotte, 33 points, 16 rebounds. You've been very vocal about trading Christian Wood. This recent performance here for Wood doesn't make him or make you want him to be part of your future?
God, it makes me want to get rid of him even more, because I was talking about doing this from a standpoint of leverage before he was in the final year of his deal, and you basically got to give him away because teams are going to say, I'm not trading for a guy that can walk at the end of the season. But because I was doing this before he got on this hot streak, I was saying, you still have the leverage. People still think he can play, and you can get something for him. Now that he's getting, you know, these massive double-doubles, and he's playing more like the player you signed him to be, you could trade him because you're not trying to win games this year anyway. And he said he wants a max deal when this deal is up. And he's not worth that to me, no matter how valuable he can be as a roster piece and a rotational piece for a really good team. If Golden State wants to give me a couple of young guys on their bench and or maybe even a Wiseman, consider that because of the fact that they already have the bigs or things like that. I'm moving Christian Wood in a heartbeat to a contender or a better team. For, again, young assets that I can build around.
I'm with you. The fact that he has the three-year deal is something that you want to get something before his contract is done. It's kind of like Justin Reed we were talking about earlier. If you see that the end is imminent, trade him. Get something in return. That way you can kick the can down the road on the commodity and at least you have value. Good news if you are on the Christian Wood trade side of things. Kevin O'Connor of The Ringer reported on a Monday that there's an expectation around the NBA that Christian Wood will receive significant trade interest and that the Rockets will entertain offers for him. So if you can get a bunch of teams that are wanting Christian Wood, I think you can actually get something of pretty good significance for Christian Wood.
Unlike the Texans, who are giving away lawn sale type prices at whatever guy they want that you were possibly interested in before the deadline, this is a Rockets team that has a couple of pieces that will draw some interest. That will have Eric Gordon is going to draw interest between now and the trade deadline, especially if he's playing the way he's playing, because, again, playoff type teams, you can never have enough shooting. And he can score, and he can do some things for you. Christian Wood's a guy that, because of the style of play in the NBA has switched to being so up-tempo, so size doesn't matter-esque. So the fact that you've got a guy that can rebound the basketball and get you double digits in rebounds, but can score the basketball and create mismatches, he should have a lot of value, and he should bring a lot in return that can help this rebuild speed up.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The AL West has spent a lot of money over the last couple of days. Will the Astros be threatened in the division next season? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, we knew it was going to be a tough division, and we know that there's a lot of very high-quality teams, and that was why we felt like we needed to go get someone like Hector to help us out. And certainly some of the additions that the teams in our division have made are guys that he is going to have to face. And so I'm looking forward to talking to him about how to get those guys out in big spots.
Hector Neris is going to be the reason that the Astros win the American League West. Look, I like the signing, but saying that it's combative to what the rest of the American League West has done is a little hyperbolic. And look, James Click was trying to dodge all questions on anybody not named Hector Neris today earlier at the introductory press conference for said relief pitcher Hector Neris. But you look at the American League West, boy, there's some money being spent by some of the other teams in this league. Seattle, do you like what they did? Signing the AL Cy Young, Robbie Ray. They traded for Adam Frazier, who was at San Diego by way of Pittsburgh, who was an all-star last year. Their two big moves so far in free agency. What do you think of what Seattle's done?
I don't think it's game-changing because I think they just caught lightning in a bottle a year ago with the way that they kind of really stepped on the gas on the rebuild and the process that they've been on. But I think that unlike some of the desperation moves like the Rangers have made just overspending, I think they spent fair market for Ray. I think they got themselves another infielder so that, you know, they don't have to shake up their entire infield and they can keep their former Gold Glove shortstop in Crawford. And they're on the uptick. They're continuing the progressive upslide, up climb of their team without having to handcuff it in the long term with the big money that, like I said, the Rangers and the Mets and teams like that are throwing away. I think that they're doing it the right way.
They feel like they're ready to win. I don't feel like they're ready to win. To me, it was smoke
they're
and mirrors.
Close, but not, yeah.
To me, they won way more games than they should have won
this past season.
Smoke
and mirrors are lightning in a bottle, but either way, it was kind of fluky.
A lot of close wins. You look at their expected win-loss record was nowhere near what their actual win-loss record was. And look, tip of your cap, you win close games, that's great. I feel like they're going to fall back to earth next season. I'm already planning on playing the under for the Seattle Mariners win total next year. I like Robbie Ray. Can he sustain that for the length of the contract? No, probably not. And if... Look, Adam Frazier's such a great player. Why are the Padres trading a good player whenever they expect to be a playoff team? I know that they have, you know, a lot of money committed to a lot of players. I'm not a huge Adam Frazier guy. I feel like, look, Seattle quality moves, like you said, nothing that's going to get them over the hump. Now the Rangers, they've spent big money, whether it was Seager, the 350 for 10, or 325 for 10 that they used yesterday. Marcus Semien, they gave the 7-year contract to. They brought in John Gray from Colorado as well. Rangers very active. Do you like what Texas has done so far in free agency?
That's, you know, between them and the Mets in terms of desperation, that's what it reeks of. I mean, you spent $500 million on your middle infield, and let's not forget Semien's age factors into this as much as anything else. As shocking as it was for Seager with all of his success and being, you know, the Dodgers version of Carlos Correa and him wanting to leave L.A., and obviously the money, you know, speaks volumes. But at the same time, for him to leave, at least at his age, it made a little bit more sense. The fact that you overspent on the years and maybe not the dollars AAV-wise, but, you know, for the term of the contract for what he's going to be worth at the end of the deal, you spent $500 million, and a good portion of that was on Marcus Semien for the last 3 to 4 years of that deal. I don't think it's going to be worth nearly the return on investment that they're hoping for. And I think that it reeks of new stadium, desperate to get fans back, get interested, pay attention. So we're going to make this massive splash and just cross our fingers and hope it works out.
That's my stance, too. They spend big money, but they spend stupid money. Yep. 325 for 10 years never works. Look at the history of baseball. Any contract of that length does not work. Carlos Correa is my favorite player. I don't want the Astros to sign Carlos Correa for a contract like that. Marcus Semien, 7 years for a player in his 30s? That doesn't work. And then John Gray, they spent, look, it wasn't a huge contract, but a significant amount of money that they spent. The idea is get John Gray out of Coors. He's going to be just fine. He's better at Coors Field over the course of his career than he is away. I feel like the Rangers spent stupid money. I think both of those teams slightly do, like, improve talent-wise. But to me, I'm not worried about them contending for the AL West. This is still the Astros division.
Yeah, it really is. I think the only thing that you do have to at least raise an eyebrow of concern to is the Angels don't have to do a whole lot but get healthy to, at least from an offensive perspective, have the second best lineup in the division and realize they got a lot of guys that could do damage, right? Because Ohtani, we never thought he was going to be offensively what he's turned into. On top of a healthy Trout and a healthy Rondon and some of the other guys that they have still on the books, that you can go, okay, offensively, they could possibly do some things, but they keep losing pitchers as much as they've added a Syndergaard. They keep losing guys in the area of the team that they need. They're desperate for help on. Starting pitching was horrible for them. It hasn't gotten any better, right? Their bullpen, average at best, hasn't gotten any better. So from everybody say, ooh, all the Astros, are you worried? All the other teams are making moves. No, because the moves they're making aren't impactful enough to impact the Astros for the next couple of years.
Right there with you. The Angels signing Syndergaard, I'm surprised they haven't been more active in the starting pitching market. And I know that they spend tons of money, but they shouldn't be trying to nickel and dime these free agents. You have Ohtani, who's at his peak, was the MVP this season. Mike Trout, how many great years does he still have left, was out this entire season. Like, give those guys a chance. I'm surprised Syndergaard's been the only addition to that starting rotation, unless you believe Michael Lorenzen from the Reds is somebody who's going to heavily impact that rotation, which I doubt, and that's why I say it tongue-in-cheek. Kendall Graveman announced to the White Sox today. Now, I mean, he got introduced to the White Sox today. We've already known about this contract for a while. He got introduced to the media there. Mm-hmm. Scott Merkin, who covers the White Sox for Major League Baseball, a couple of tweets about Graveman and things that he had to say during his press conference. Graveman said that he felt wanted by the White Sox. He enjoyed working and dealing with Rick Hahn in the process. That's the GM there in Chicago, and wanted to go to a team in contention. The fact that Graveman saying he wanted to go to a team in contention, the Astros would have been, and he felt wanted by the White Sox, that reads to me, and if I'm off base, let me know, 713-780-3776.
Don't have to worry about the calls. I'm here.
That reads to me that the Astros were not interested in Kendall Graveman.
I think you're probably right. I think that this is the harsh reality of analytics and pro sports being a business. I think that it's, again, we go to the whole Janet Jackson philosophy, but it is a what have you done for me lately, but it's also what are you going to do for me in the future? And when we start talking about, you know, the futures on the you know, the different prognosticators and analytics people that say, look, he is what he is right now, but in 2 to 3 years, he's supposed to be this as opposed to that. And that weighs into it. And it's the frustrating part of where sports has evolved to. And it's not just in baseball. And it started with my experiences in basketball, where the eye test and the gut feel and the chemistry and the ability to get along with teammates portion of sports is completely put on the side burner while everything is focused on every bit of numbers and what those numbers potentially could mean in the future. And that's what it basically says to me, too. James Click said, hey, you know what? Here's a former starter. That again, like we said, this is kind of like the Mariners of last season conversation we just had. He caught lightning in a bottle. They put him in a new role and he excelled. But overall, for the future, he showed us some dents in the armor that said, hey, wait a minute. He can't come back on two straight days without having some arm issues or tired arm or doesn't feel like he's the same. Hey, wait a minute. He wants a third year and we're not even sure for the next 2 years he can at least sustain what he's done this last year where we can get a proven reliever a year less at the same money who's been there, done that, and gets up every time they need him to get up in the bullpen. I think that's probably why James Click did what he did.
How many times, too, did we have the conversation? How many times was Dusty Baker asked, is Kendall Graveman hurt? Like, there was at least two times that I can remember where the media was asking Dusty Baker if Kendall Graveman was hurt because it was like a third day where he hadn't pitched in back-to-back days, a setup situation
and
in the
instances you're talking about, it's one thing in Baltimore on a Tuesday night, but when we're talking about playoffs or
leverage,
on the cusp of the playoffs, that's where you got to be concerned.
The Astros, in my opinion, did not like what they saw from Kendall Graveman.
I agree with that.
He got guys out, and his ERA wasn't terrible, but he was not as dominant in Houston as he was in Seattle. Like you said, over the course of his career, he's had one good season. This was this past season. Is he going to continue to have that success now that he's a full-time reliever? His number of games that he appeared in were 20 fewer than Hector Neris, even though that they were both healthy the entire season, couldn't pitch back-to-back. You're always kind of wondering if he was hurt. And then the advanced numbers and like the expected projections on Kendall Graveman weren't that great. And the quote here from Merkin saying that he felt wanted by the White Sox. If he's wanted by the White Sox, that to me reads that he was not wanted by the Astros.
But here's the Jeremy, that's the interesting part of this. And maybe the truth will never come out on this, right? But we keep saying it's a business. But at a certain point, because like I told you about when I used to do the Rockets games and I'd get the tap on the shoulder, you can't talk about a guy like that. Like, you wonder what that conversation was like. Like, do you think that there's ever a chance that they would want to bring Graveman back so you handle him with kid gloves and you say, hey, we're interested, but this is our number. We're kind of, you know, cap-strapped. This is what we're looking at. Or is it just the harsh realities of the world where James Click picks up the phone and goes, hey, man, we appreciate all you were able to do for us this last year. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to come up with the kind of dollars and the kind of years you're looking for. Good luck wherever you go. Because to me, it seems like James Click is that cut and dried. Like, he's not a building relationships, you know, worried about the overall reputation of like the feel good kind of way you treat players.
Yeah.
It's more Bill Belichick. Like when you're here and you're performing, you're my guy. And the minute you stop performing, you're not my guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of general managers are like that. I think Click is a little bit more personable when it comes to like the interaction. But aside from the interaction, when he's making decisions, I totally believe that. I wouldn't be surprised if they never even really talked to Kendall Graveman. Hey, Graveman, how many years you won? Three? Okay, thank you for your service. We wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. 713-780-3776. Kevin Negandhi of ESPN, studio guy on ABC for their college football Saturday host SportsCenter. You know him. He joins us next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you again about my good friends at Apollo Men's Health. The reason why I tell you about Apollo Men's Health is because they do it the right way, and your health is your wealth. You have to invest in yourself, just like you play the stock market or do other things that have benefits for you. You have to take care of you, and it starts with Apollo Men's Health. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston, and they take care of you every step of the way. It starts for both men and women with hormone therapy and the multiple ways that they have the ability to get you the upgrade in the way you feel and feeling like you're in your 20s and your 30s again instead of feeling like you're run down and you can never feel that way ever again. It's possible, people, and it starts with making that first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com. Book it, and you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted. There's discounts for military personnel and first responders. But see all the different ways they can help you, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. They have answers if you have questions. They have a solution and a program if you're honest with them. They're going to ask you some tough questions, but if you give them honest answers, they're going to put you on a path to getting and feeling like you thought you never could again. They're fantastic people. They do it the right way. They cut out all the minutiae and the things that don't work, and they get you all the things that do. From full body composition analysis to recovering quicker with HGH peptide therapy, they have everything under the two roofs near downtown Houston where they better serve you. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Your teams, our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joining us now on the HR&P guest line, Kevin Negandhi of ESPN, studio guy for ABC's College Football Saturday, host SportsCenter in the primetime spot each and every day. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. But how about the Brian Kelly to LSU news? Kind of blindsided everybody.
Jeremy, Joel, it is a carnage season on the field and a carnage off season so far, right? Like, and here's the thing, like, I think that surprised a lot of people, but now we have two major programs that would be humongous news, Oklahoma and Notre Dame now open, and then the domino effect that could potentially could affect other teams that are in the playoff if those jobs are filled. It is just the last 48 hours have been incredible, and the minute we say this is the craziest day we've seen, I think it's just going to get a little bit nuttier as the week continues.
Kev, how do you see the whole Lincoln Riley leaving Oklahoma situation? Because I've been pretty critical of the fact that, look, you were going to the SEC whether you liked it or not, and you heard rumblings he wasn't too fond of that. If he considered LSU when they made a run at him, he was still going to be in that conference, in that gauntlet, and dealing with that competition. He got the unbelievable sweetheart deal to actually kind of avoid all of that gauntlet by just going to the Pac-12, taking SC, knowing that there's not the kind of expectations there are in the SEC, and yet got all the benefits to just say, hey, this is easy street for me.
Well, you know, he goes to a better situation, especially when when it comes to expectations, right? LSU, every single year, yep. The expectation is, you better go 9-2 at worst, maybe 10-1, and let's be in the conversation in the West, right? Here you go to a place where, you know, they had the deal with Pete Carroll off the sanctions afterwards, right? Then they had the deal with Lane Kiffin and the Clay Helton. So the expectations at USC are low. When I say low, where they're at 6-7 wins, and that's what we've seen the last couple of years consistent-wise, what do you do? You dominate Southern California, and you can make that into a powerhouse within 2 years. And that's an easier path to the playoff. There's no doubt about it. And who knows about expansion down the road. But I can't blame them, especially when you look at the USC contract that they just gave them. Yeah. And I can't speak for Lincoln because I know he's a competitive. I can't speak for him to say he's ducking the SEC because he hasn't told me that. He hasn't said that to anybody, nor would he say that publicly. But I can tell you that if you're looking at – this is not, when you look at USC, this is not going to a Pac-12 school. This is going to a brand, right, guys? This is a top 10 brand regardless. And that's not a knock on the Pac-12, but if you go to every major power conference, There are schools that are bigger than the conference, that are just brands on their own. USC is one of them. And if he brings them back up, it's no longer a Pac-12 school. It's a national school. And that's where it was over a decade ago with Pete Carroll.
Kevin Negandhi of ESPN, one of the best in the business, joining us on the Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Brian Kelly, Lincoln Riley, both of those guys getting crushed with how they handled the current landscape of their teams that they left, whether it was Oklahoma, whether it was Notre Dame. I advocate a little bit for both of those guys. Say, hey, look, there's no great way to break up with the girlfriend, right? What's the proper way to handle that situation if you're a coach that's leaving?
There is no proper way because somebody's going to be ticked off regardless, right? And if you're going to cast the blame, look at the system and the presidents and the departments that are handing out the money. I've always said that it is unfair to get mad at a college athlete with the NIL conversation, you know, leaving before bowl season to protect their body, transferring. Coaches do it all the time. And if we're asking this from 18 to 22-year-olds to follow a certain way, and then we're seeing adults make this decision daily to make millions and millions, and I think players in this day and age now, in the last year, are more aware of NIL transfer portal opportunities, so they're not going to hate on their coaches leaving them. You saw that with Notre Dame's, you know, a handful of Notre Dame players on a podcast last night say, we're not going to fault Brian Kelly for leaving because they understand capitalism. They understand the business. So I don't fault these two guys because when can they leave, right? It is a perfect example about you're dating somebody. You know that they're pretty and you know that they're handsome. We'll use both sides, right? But at the same time, you know some of their faults. They dump you, then you're going to air all their faults. But they weren't that big of a deal beforehand because they were together with you. And I think that's how fan bases process coaches. And I just, listen, it's a reality. It's the reality of everything. For Oklahoma fans to get upset about Lincoln Riley leaving them, well, where were they when Oklahoma announced that they were leaving the Big 12 to go to the SEC? And that was a sudden announcement. There was no buildup to that. So to me, I got to call people out when they do that and they get upset about somebody leaving. There's no good breakup in the history of mankind.
You and I have a future of doing a Dr. Phil-type sports-related podcast because I just tied in another analogy in relationships with the Texans where if you have a Justin Reed and you know he's not going to be a part of the team in a year, and it's like a divorce from a bad relationship. You know she's leaving anyway, but if on the way out you get the dog in the car, at least you get something for him instead of letting him walk for nothing. So I think you and I could be the next successors to Dr. Phil if we need to be in terms of how it relates to sports.
I'll need a backup plan. I'll take it.
Whoa. You got to come in 100% confident or we can't do this. All right, I got to ask you. How's this whole playoff going to shake out? We know we're about a week away. We know conference. Look, I'm working with Mr. Houston Cougar announcer himself over here, who's all giddy about the opportunity with Cincinnati, and he should be. But, you know, Cincinnati finally got their due. They got their respect. They're in the top four. We know Oklahoma State, and even without Brian Kelly, they're not Notre Dame knocking on the door. How do you see it all shaking out in the next several days?
Well, how about this, guys? Because, like, Michigan's feeling great, but they're going to be in a slop fest against Iowa. Iowa is really, really tough. So that's not a cakewalk. I do not think Cincinnati is going to win in a cakewalk either. I don't even know what the line is, but I would take Houston in the points just because I love their defense.
I think it was 10.
They play physical. If you're asking me for my predictions, I do believe Michigan will win, and they'll get in, and they'll be in the playoff. Regardless of the outcome in Atlanta, Georgia's in, no matter what. They cannot make a fall from 1-5, regardless, because if you look at the teams behind them, they can't make up the ground here. The question will be now, what does Oklahoma State do? Like, if Cincinnati falters, or if it's a one-point win and Oklahoma State dominates Baylor, how will the committee look at the wins, especially with how they view the American? I'm very curious about that. I look forward to seeing what, you know, the rankings will be like tonight. But as of right now, I think Georgia's in no matter what. I think Georgia will beat Alabama, so Alabama's out of the conversation. I think Michigan's going to win, so they're going to be in. I think Cincinnati's going to win. That's a huge, huge question that I have right now. So we will have to see how that plays out. And then the Oklahoma State factor comes into this conversation, guys. I mean, You cannot make an argument for Notre Dame to come in right now if Cincinnati handles their business. So if Oklahoma State hypothetically wins by 7 to 10 points, they're in. They win the conference. So Alabama's out of the conversation, and then Oklahoma State's in it. So it would be fascinating, and the most telling thing would be, think about this, guys. For Michigan's situation, they beat Iowa, and then hypothetically they get in as a 2 seed. Cincinnati's in as a 3 seed. They beat Cincinnati, and we're talking about a team just a few months ago where it's like, Where's Michigan? Now they're in the national championship, potentially playing Georgia. I know I'm looking way ahead, but that's standing right in front of them.
I think that's the beauty of college football. Kevin DeGondi joining us on the HR&P guest line. I'm looking at your schedule here on Saturday because Baylor, Oklahoma State kick off the day 11 a.m., the main event at 3 p.m. with Houston and Cincinnati on ABC, and then Pitt and Wake that night. Are you on set the whole day? When do you go to the bathroom? When do you eat? What's your day like on Saturday?
But I'm not Scott Hansen, so I can take a break. It's not red zone the entire time. So we do updates in between the games as well. Booger and I are sitting on lounge chairs. We've got all the TVs up. We do it every single Saturday. But those are 13-hour days. I don't leave until the final second comes off that 8 o'clock primetime game. So it's around 11 o'clock Eastern time. Sometimes it's 11:10. Sometimes it's 10:55. And then I do a Phil show so we get to all the ABC locals. But I'm in it. I'm in at work in my office at 10:30 in the morning, watching game day, getting ready, and then walk down to the set and in the studio with Booger and I from noon all the way down. And I always tell people it's the best job in the world. I would not change it. And I'm lucky to call Monday through Friday my 6 p.m. gig with L. Duncan, the second best job. And then once college football is out, it's L and I the rest of the season. And I love it, man. I'm pretty lucky, and I'm not working.
Well, and you do a hell of a job at it, too, and that's the thing. I mean, you know, the fact that you still have the appreciation, too, of the fact that you're able to do those things. I hope they cater good food for you, and they give you, like, a treadmill or something, too, so that at least you have a life. But at the same time, the fact that you're, you know, doing what you do and loving what you do, that has to mean everything to you.
I appreciate it, guys. I'm 15 years at ESPN, and I treat it like every day it's my first, and I make sure of that, so... I think that's the only way I can continue to appreciate. You know, anybody that does any job, it's a grind no matter what, right? But if you come in and you don't take anything for granted, which I have never done, I will never do, I come in acting like I'm an unrestricted free agent trying to earn a job.
Yeah, awesome. I think it's the perfect outlook to have for that. Kevin, thanks so much for joining us. Really enjoy the conversation. And cheer on the Cougars for us next Saturday afternoon.
I can't do that.
I know.
I will root for some carnage because it's always fun to talk about it, guys. Thank you. Have a great holiday.
Kevin DeGondi, the ABC studio guy on their college football Saturday, and then hosting the primetime sports center each and every day, is very good at his
good
job,
dude.
And appreciate the conversation. A couple of things that he said that really stood out to me. We'll get into that on the other side. Also, Tiger Woods publicly speaking for the first time since his accident. Does he have a future in golf? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, by the way, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about New Breaks because I believe in New Breaks. I only speak for companies I believe in. I believe in New Breaks because they came to the station. They did my breaks while I was doing a show. It was painless. They have certified technicians that all they do is breaks. They're not going to upsell you on anything else or try and tell you your car is breaking down in other areas. And they're going to do their job with the same competitive prices as any brake shop in town, from the parts to the labor to the overall process. And right now, you can take my word for it. You can take all the listeners that have gone the same route and done the same thing. Or you can go to nubrakes.com. And you can mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%, set up your appointment, and see what everybody else, including myself, has been talking about. The fact that they're going to take care of you every step of the way. And by the way, they're also going to save you time, which is saving you money, because instead of going to a brake shop, sitting in the waiting room at the mercy of a slow mechanic, wasting hours upon hours in a dreadful situation, you could be in a meeting, catching up on emails, doing your work at the office while they do your car and fix your brakes in the parking garage. You could be at the house cutting the lawn or drinking a beer or watching a game or watching Kevin DeGondi. And all they're doing is fixing your brakes in the garage or in the driveway. It's multitasking. It's saving time, which is saving money. Check them out today. Newbrakes.com. That's NUBrakes.com. Tell them ESPN 97.5 sent you by.
ESPN 97.5.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did you catch what Kevin Nagandi, ABC, College Football Saturday, studio host, ESPN, primetime, Monday through Friday. Did you see what he said? Cincinnati going to struggle against Houston? Second
what is the
guess?
Spread? 10, right?
I don't know Houston spreads, so I couldn't tell you.
Stop it. You were just telling Brendan in the break that you were leaning heavily on the Cougars.
Definitely did not. Don't put that out there. That's not true at all. I would never do
you
that.
You started putting stuff out about my wife and my relationship with question marks. Did he not, Brendan? Did he not bring that to the table?
Nothing factual. I said, I wonder why you went straight there.
He was just being a good friend.
And rumors.
Absolutely. I mean,
would you just call him a what?
He was being a good friend. He was checking out on checking in on you.
Said we're friends.
You put in a legitimate action, you try to create a fact that was not a fact. Right. I just asked you a question.
I can make squirm. Just remember that.
you think that. That's great.
I know that.
Probably not. Cincinnati struggling against Houston, Kevin Nagandi says. I hope he's right. Look, I like Houston's chances. Obviously, I'm a homer, so I really think that the Houston Cougars can go into Nippert Stadium and beat Cincinnati. I like Cincinnati a lot as a team. I've said that for a long time, that they're more talented than people give them credit for because they have Cincinnati across their jersey and not like Alabama across their jersey. Yes, they've struggled against a few American Conference teams. It's tough to go undefeated over the course of a year. They also whooped up on Notre Dame in Notre Dame, handed them their only loss by two possessions. Cincinnati's very good. I think Houston's very good too, though.
I'm pulling for the Cougs, and as much as I like to flip you a hard time about it, and it makes good radio. Look, I want what's best for this city. I want what's best for this program. I'm pulling for the Cougars regardless. But I really legitimately think they got a shot. I think that obviously injuries are going to be a key, and they've got to be healthy. But I think they can give them a game, and I think that they can cover the spread. And I think they got a chance because offensively, if they can have balance and run the football and also sling it around when they have to, I think that they got a chance. And I love that. I love the fact that they're in the conversation because we weren't having this conversation the first couple weeks of the season. After the collapse in the second half against Tech, there were questions about if Dana was on the hot seat. There was questions about the overall where the program was, where it's going. Now we know so much more. There's so many answers, and it's all positives. And it's a great story. And again, with all the negativity we have in this town centered around the Texans and the Rockets, you look at the programs at U of H, but particularly what Dana was able to do after he hadn't done that yet from the time he got here, and what he could possibly do now. They're not going to end up winning the game and getting inserted into the top four by any means, but they could be the reason that everything gets shaken up on the top in terms of the final four, get themselves a nice bowl game, and then capitalize on that to keep progressing in the future. I love it.
New Year's Six bowl game, too. There's a lot on the line for the Cougars, too. They have nothing to lose in the sense because Cincinnati's playing for everything, but the Cougars would be, you'd have to imagine they would jump San Diego State to be the top Group of Five champion and be in a New Year's Six game, which would be Fiesta Bowl, so I wouldn't hate that. Jake Crane of the J-Boy Show podcast, who joined us yesterday, by the way, he mentioned that the Houston Cougars are a sleeping giant. I don't disagree. Houston Final Four last year, leave it going to the Big 12 in a couple of years. Perhaps the next powerhouse in college sports. Tiger Woods speaking publicly for the first time since his accident where he nearly lost his leg. Tiger pretty candid with this conversation that he had with Golf Digest. He talked about how, look, he's never going to be a full-time player again.
I don't have to compete and play again. Best players in the world to have a great life. I know that after my back fusion, for me, I had to prove it to myself. I had to climb Mount Everest one more time. I had to do it, and I did it. This time around, I don't think I will have the body to climb Mount Everest, and that's okay. But I can't participate in the game of golf. I can still, maybe if my leg gets good enough, maybe click off a tournament here or there. But as far as climbing the mountain, get all the way to the top, I don't think that's a realistic expectation of me, but I think something that is realistic is playing the tour one day, never full-time ever again. Pick and choose, just like what Mr. Hogan did. You pick and choose a few events a year, and you play around that. You practice around it and try to gear yourself up for that, and you play it. I think that's kind of how I'm going to have to play it from now on. It's an unfortunate reality, but it's my reality, and I understand it and I accept it.
You're getting heavily bothered over there during that soundbite.
Because you know what?
Glasses off, grimaces on face.
Let's just be realist. Before the car wreck, He was already doing that. He was picking and choosing events. He wasn't playing a full-time schedule. He was living his best life as Tiger Woods and knowing that everybody was paying to see him. So he could pick and choose. The difference now is that because of the car accident, he has more health concerns to have to deal with so that it's going to maybe limit him even more in the tournaments he participates in. Look, he also talked in that interview about the fact that there was a 50-50 shot he was walking out of that hospital on one leg and that he was going to have the other leg amputated. The fact that he's walking and can spend time with his kids, it's a phenomenal situation for him, and that's what you want. His best life is lived with his health. Obviously, we'd all love to see him come back and play. I've always been a firm believer of, if not for the 9-iron from Elin, and all the issues off the course that started the negative transition to the injuries with the back and now this, I think he would have broken Jack's record. I think he's the greatest golfer we've ever seen. I also think that there are a few courses that he knows and strategically plays better than anyone else, that if he can just get that swing down from the standpoint of just making sure he's hitting consistent shots. He already said, I don't see the same ball flight. The ball's not doing the same things it did pre-injury. Well, it's not expected to. But like take for Augusta, for example, because so the courses that I'm thinking about, there's Pebble Beach, there's Augusta National for sure, St. Andrews, which he said this year, it's his favorite course on the planet
Those are the three for me.
Those are the three, and the sleeper is Torrey Pines because he's won there at Torrey Pines too, and he knows exactly where the ball has to be placed. And it's more about placement than distance when you see the DeChambeaus and the Koepkas and all the guys that are just absolutely driving for show and dough these days, and Dustin Johnson. Those are thinking man's courses where positioning, especially at Augusta, I felt like even in his 50s, he always has a chance to win at Augusta because he knows exactly where you can and can't hit a shot, and he can hit it there. If he can still hit it there, he's got a shot. But for the game of golf and for all he's already given, it would be nice to see him still be relevant every now and then in a tournament. But I just don't know if with all he's been through health-wise that he can do it.
Listening to him yesterday cemented to me that he's really done as a professional golfer. Like, I think he's going to probably play in a few events here and there as kind of I hate saying like a novelty act because it's Tiger Woods. Yeah. He also spoke today ahead of the tournament that he's it's like his tournament, so that's why he was speaking to the media today. A little bit more clarity about what to expect from him going forward, and this one doesn't sound as promising.
I'll put you this way. As far as playing at the tour level, I don't know when that's going to happen. Now, I'll play around here and there, a little hit and giggle. I can do something like that. I certainly like playing from, you know, the USGA suggests play forward. I really like that idea now. I don't like the tees on back, so I like play it forward. Come on, let's move it up. Let's move it up. To see some of my shots fall out of the sky a lot shorter than they used to is a little eye-opening. But at least I'm able to do it again. That's something that for a while there, it didn't look like I was going to. I'm able to participate in the sport of golf. Now, to what level, I do not know that. And, you know, I'll keep you abreast of all of you guys abreast as progress continues to go on, whether or not I'll be out here and at what level and when.
I think he's done. We've seen the last of Tiger Woods as a professional golfer, in my opinion.
He resurrected the sport single-handedly. He has the respect and the compassion of all of his fellow competitors, maybe side of Phil, because of the fact that even the young guys, the Justin Thomases of the world and all the young guys that you saw show their support when he actually came back and won tournaments, that he is golf. And so whether it's for financial reasons or otherwise, like the Hero World Challenge this week that he's speaking at is his own tournament that he's created because he wants to give back to the military. And if you've read any of the books about his training and all the things he did because of his dad's history,
led to a few of the back surgeries.
It's exactly right. And if you look at, and again, in the book, they said that as much as one of his greatest victories of all time against Rocco Mediate in the Open, he blamed it on a golf injury. And from a lot of people said it was one-on-one combat drills that he was doing while training with the military. Mm-hmm. So he was his own detriment in terms of not being the greatest win from a statistical standpoint, wins, total wins of majors. He's won more tournaments than anybody else. He doesn't have anything else to prove. He doesn't need any more money. But selfishly, there's so many like me that are sitting there going, I just want to see him on a Sunday wearing red one more time in the thick of things. because of how sweet it was when he came back to win the Masters and have his kids there to actually enjoy what their dad was in his heyday. I would love to see that again. The sport of golf needs that to happen because they don't have a Tiger Woods. They've got a lot of good golfers, but without Tiger Woods, they would never have the purses and the amount of money that they have.
I don't think we'll ever see another Tiger Woods, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of competition in the game now, and to have somebody that would just change the game like Tiger did, it's not happening. Ocho's asking, is Broken Tiger still the best, biggest PGA draw? 100%, no doubt about it.
Without a question. And here's the thing, Jeremy, for everything that you just said, too, we're just talking about his golf game, but what he meant culturally for the standpoint of he opened up a door to African-American kids to say golf is not taboo. Yep. Golf is not for rich kids. Golf is something that can be played by anyone, any color, at any time. That's why we're never going to see another Tiger Woods.
A little eerie, too, that Tiger having this press conference a couple days after Lee Elder died Sunday at the age of 87, who broke the color barrier at the Masters in 1975. So rest in peace, Lee Elder.
Yes.
And sounds like Tiger, maybe Ryder Cup captains, maybe participating in the match, but doesn't sound like as a touring pro, we've never seen it again. Has Carlos Correa, has the market dried up? Perhaps some teams that could sign the former Astros shortstop. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
See, I would never say something like that because I'm a true believer in everything Houston, and just like I'm a believer in Fitz Roofing for that very same reason, because Fitz Roofing believes in the people of Houston. They take care of them on a daily basis. They do so in a variety of ways, and it starts with the fact that they do everything with a free, no-obligation inspection to start the process. They come to you. They tell you what they can do. It costs you nothing, and whether it be a roof repair, a brand-new roof on your house or your business, or some home repairs, or maybe a fence in your yard, they will tell you what they can do and the price it's going to cost, and then they're going to go on with the rest of their day. You want them to come back, schedule the appointment, make sure that you take care of all the details. They'll be there every step of the way. Customer service, second to none, and the ratings are the best in the business. The warranties are the best in the business. The products are the best in the business. Need I say more? Why would you go anywhere else? Check them out, FITZRoofing.com. Better yet, call them and get that free no-obligation inspection, 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference, one home at a time.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.